Yeah, you may have done this during the greeting, I don't know, but just in case you've gotten up today and you haven't really been able to say to someone kind of eye to eye, Happy Easter, turn to each person on each side of you and say Happy Easter to them. Let them know. There you go. Just want to be crystal clear as to why we're here. That's all. It's great to see you today. I love the story of the pastor that on Easter Sunday morning was doing a children's sermon, has the children down front. And, you know, if you've ever done these things or seen pastors do them, you know the most dangerous thing you can do is ask an open-ended question. And so the pastor asked the children there, what was the first thing that Jesus said when he rose from the grave? And when the little boy was, I know, he said, ta-da. I love that because it captures the surprise and the excitement of really what we're here to celebrate this morning. So I love that part of it. It captures that it's more than just a surprise. It was a shock to those first disciples. It was unimaginable in their own minds. And yet, absolutely, there's something changed in that moment when Jesus came back from the dead. Not something that's just found in a child's words, but something very deep. One of the great leaders of against racism in South Africa was a spiritual leader and a warrior against that racism named Desmond Tutu. He once wrote this that takes this ta-da, which I like, to something that is more revolutionary. He says this, here's our defining story. For us who are Christians, the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ is proof positive that love is stronger than hate, that life is stronger than death, that light is stronger than darkness, that laughter, joy, and compassion, and gentleness, and truth, all these are so much stronger than their ghastly counterparts. We live in a world where we hear a lot of both. But what Easter is really is more than a game changer. It is about possibility. It is about life. It's about hope. I once read a question. If you could sum up Jesus and what he did and who he was in one word, what would it be? And people listed all kinds of words. But my word was simply life. That's what Jesus was about. There's something in that cute ta-da story, like I said, that really captures the surprise of the first Easter. One minute they were defeated, we think, and the next minute they were filled with optimism and joy and hope. At least sometimes that's the way we tell the story. But the truth is, in the first Easter, it wasn't from 1 minute to 1 minute. Ultimately, when they heard the message of this mystery that Jesus had risen, it was confusion. It was entering into broken dreams. It was entering into something that they couldn't imagine, their crushed hearts. The general story of Easter, when the church tells it on this morning, is one day, the first day of the week, the women went to the tomb. They found the tomb was empty. An angel said to them that he was not here, but he had risen. And they went away to tell others, and the rest is history. I believe that, but I have to put in a, hold on a minute. The truth is, there was a lot more struggle in this story than we often sometimes represent. It's not an instantaneous aha moment. It took a while for the fog and the disappointment and the grief and the disillusionment to really become hope. One of my favorite authors is a guy by the name of John Ortberg. He says it this way, quote, sometimes hope comes early to you, but sometimes hope comes late. So I want to tell you a story that sort of gets usually left out of Easter morning, but it is an Easter resurrection story. There were two of these followers of Jesus who had been there when all the hatred and violence took place against Jesus. And they were confused that he had died and not started some kind of revolution, somehow brought hope. I mean, this was generational for them. They were Hebrews. They had believed God was going to send someone who was going to make a difference, kick out Rome, give them freedom, give them peace. And that seemed to die the day Jesus died. They were leaving Jerusalem on Easter day. They were depressed, discouraged, grieving, hopeless, kind of shuffling along, going to this village called Emmaus, some 7 miles away, 7 miles of walking. And I'm convinced they were discussing, I don't know, if you've had something really tragic or difficult happen in your life, something that knocked you off your feet, but there's a tendency to kind of rehearse the details until you figure it out and hope something's different. I think they were rehearsing these details. He was our leader. He was our friend. And the religious leaders and the Roman authorities, the people in power, were able to put him to death. And I just imagine them walking, shaking their heads in disbelief. How did it come to this? We'd expected something totally different. I think they might have been rehearsing that phrase that you hear a lot today. It is what it is. Have you ever said that? I've said that. It is what it is. Sounds grown up. Sounds smart. Sounds like maybe someone who's accepting things. But in a way, it also has a sense of quitting, of resignation in it too. While they're wrapped in their own story. Now, they're telling this over and over again. I mean, again, if you've ever gone through an issue, a real relational problem, you keep talking about it, and things don't necessarily seem to change sometimes. And all of a sudden, there's a stranger walking with them. Now, I love this part of the story, because Luke tells us that the stranger is Jesus, the resurrected Jesus. But they're not told that. We're told that. We, the readers, get it. It says, according to Luke, they were kept from recognizing him. Now, there's a part of me that wonders some things. First of all, I wonder how people who clearly recognize Jesus in his physical life didn't recognize him at this moment. Is it that Jesus' appearance was different? Is it that somehow their grief was so thick and the fog so heavy? You know, your mind can't imagine someone coming back from the dead, so you're not going to expect to see him. Was it a psychological thing? We don't exactly know. We just know that they didn't know it was Jesus. Was it a spiritual thing is what I wonder. Was it something spiritual, something going on in them? What I know from my own experience is that sometimes our perspectives keep us from seeing what's really going on. It's true of all of us. All too often, we aren't able to see the thing that's right in front of our face, the person, the situation as it is. All of us have experienced this. We think we know what's going on. I mean, surely some of you have said, I think I know what's going on in this relationship, only to find out you didn't know. I know what's going on in this friendship. I know what's going on in this marriage. I know what's going on in their life, only to find out that you didn't know, that you were wrong. One of the stories I love is of an elderly couple who had been married 60 years, and it had been a loving relationship. They'd gotten along great. They were in full trust of each other. They had kept one secret throughout their marriage, or she had, or she told him about it early on. The little lady had a shoebox on top of her closet, and she cautioned her husband to never look in that box, that she was just, that was her box and her territory. And at first, it was hard for him to think about it. I mean, you know, if it had been me, honestly, I'd have probably went over the next day and looked in it. But he trusted her, and he knew that she loved him, and he didn't want to break that. And sometimes he thought about looking, and then days went by, and then months, and then he sort of forgot about it, began to think about it less. And then the years went by, and all of a sudden, she was diagnosed with a pretty serious illness. And he had to kind of set things in order. And as he was doing that, he found the little box. And he took it over to her bedside, and he sat down, and he said, now, and she said, now. And so he opened it up. And inside, he found two crochet dials and $70,000. Imagine that. And so he asked, what's this about? And she said, well, when we were to be married, my grandmother set me down, and she told me that the secret to a happy marriage was to never argue. She told me that what I needed to do if I got angry was to just keep quiet and go crochet a doll. As the little man looked at the two crochet dials, he was overcome with a sense of, you mean all these years and I've only made you angry twice. And he was just filled with this luminous, even though he was grieving about her physical condition, this luminous joy. And then he said, but what about the $70,000? Where'd that come from? And she said, oh, that's the money I made from selling all the other dolls. That's all it is. Sometimes you think you know what's going on, but you don't. The resurrection story is like that. Jesus is walking up beside them, and here's what I love. There's no ta-da. As a matter of fact, Jesus is sneaky. I don't think we think of this. We don't think of Jesus as playful, but I think he was in a very real way. And he walks up, and he not only makes no issue of himself or his own presence, he basically, as he's walking along with them, says, what are you all talking about so intensely? Like he doesn't know. And so what we're told is they begin to tell Jesus the story. They're like, you must have been under a rock for the last 3 days. Let us tell you. And here's what Luke records them saying to Jesus. He was a prophet, powerful in word and deed before God and all people. The chief priest and our rulers handed him over to be sentenced to death, and they crucified him. And then this statement, and here's what this week has lived with me, these words, but we had hoped. We had hoped that he was the one who was going to redeem Israel. But we had hoped. Hope's a strange thing for us. For some of us, as we go through life and get some bumps and bruises and some knockdowns and some hurts, we begin to think hope's sort of for other people. We begin to think maybe hope's naive. And one of the ways to not be hurt anymore or not be let down in life is just to not hope. Just to sort of leave that to simple people. But I have to deal with real life, and I live in a world where I have to pay the bills, so I'm not going to get my hopes up. But we all have moments where we hope something and that something didn't happen. Our executive minister, Jason Brown, was telling some of the worship staff this past week that since he was a young child, he's been saving his baseball cards and believing that somehow he had a cash cow in all those cards. And finally, Dana, you know, sort of said to him, okay, you know, you've had these things long enough, you get them out, you know, whatever you do with them, I don't know, but you get them out, you look at them, it's time to do something. So Jason decided he was going to sell them. So his hopes are very high. He's in his 30s, I don't know how old he is exactly, I should have looked that up. But anyway, he's lived a while, he's got two kids, this could be a nice amount of money. So he took it to have it valued, and basically the places he took it said this, they're not worth the cardboard that they're printed on. Ah, I had hoped. Where's the Mickey Mantle card, you know? We have all kinds of hopes. And sometimes the pin gets pulled on that. These are in some ways not their words, they're our words. We had hoped to raise a family, but we've had one loss of a pregnancy after another. We had hoped, we had this great dream, we had this plan worked out, but the plan went sideways. We had hoped to live for what matters, but now we're just trying to keep our head above water and pay the bills. We had hoped for happily ever after, but life got hard, it got busy, life happened, and now we just sort of coexist. We had hoped, and then our job went south and our health turned bad and life took a wicked turn. We had hoped, all of us here can fit somewhere into that we had hoped. Sometimes we lose hope and decide that's the way to protect ourselves. But in our heart of hearts, we know that you really can't live without hope. Someone has said you can live weeks without food. You can live minutes without you can live weeks without food. You can live days without water. You can live minutes without oxygen, but only a few seconds without hope. These two on the Emmaus Road had their individual stories tied up in a larger story. That larger story was their faith. That God, the God of Israel, was going to deliver them. They'd longed for that ancient fulfillment. So it just wasn't their personal hopes. This was generational, it was collective, and it was deep, but we had hoped. What I take from that statement about these disciples is they weren't just shocked or upset or grieving over the loss of their friend. They were in danger of one of the most catastrophic losses in life, and that is resignation, giving up. Throwing in the towel, going through the motions, living without passion or purpose, just trying to get to the next hour or the next day or to the weekend or whatever it is. Resignation. Never really living, just existing, kind of giving up on life. We say that's the way the cookie crumbles. It is what it is. Maybe you know that line from the great movie, The Princess Bride, life is pain. Anyone who says anything different is trying to sell you something. Isn't it true that when we say it is what it is, that what we're really doing is giving up a little bit? We're not being seasoned or smart. You can postpone hope for later or for another life, but we need it today. Now, what I like about this story is it doesn't end with resignation. What I like about this story is that something breaks them out of their resignation. And it's not something they did. This is really important. Sometimes over the years, I talk to people a lot who say, I grew up in church, but it seems like all the church was ever saying to me was, try harder. And I'd try harder, and it wouldn't go well. And so the message was, try harder, but you'll feel worse. I talk to people that feel that way about where they are now in their faith anyway. I understand that. But I try and help people back up from their church experience. And let's talk about how God operates. And I don't think that's the way God operates. Jesus knew they couldn't get themselves out of this. Jesus comes alongside them, and then, having listened to their story, I love this. He doesn't preach to them. He doesn't guilt them. Why don't you all believe? I told you I was going to do this. He simply listens to their story, and then he reframes the whole story. It's the same circumstance. They're on the same road, this road of resignation. But something happens because of the way it's framed. Jesus breaks in on them. What happens to them is revolutionary and it's disruptive. It's not that they just tried harder and things got okay. No, no. Jesus came in when they were alone. And there's two of them, but they were alone. Many of you remember, many of you are old enough to remember September the 11th, 2001. How many people remember it? You remember it, you're old enough. Okay, pretty old crowd here today, but anyway. I remember it. I was at home preparing a message. No TV and that stuff. And I got a call from the office about maybe 30 minutes in. The buildings were down. Turn on the television. And it was tectonic. It was like the earth beneath my feet shook. Playing it over and over again. And there was this, I don't know, we were a ways in, maybe a couple of hours in. But I'll never forget whoever was narrating the scene. It's before we knew that 2,977 people had died, that 411 of them were emergency workers, that 343 of them and a chaplain were firemen and women. Before we knew that. And the commentator said this. When everyone else, showing the video over and over of people trying to escape in the cloud, you know, right behind them or overtaking them, when everyone else was running away, the first responders were running in. I've always respected people who live that kind of life. But that respect was ramped up. But I stood on the courthouse steps with several other pastors 2 days later with a throng of people gathered in downtown Bowling Green. I had two messages. One is we will not live in fear. It's not who we are. To be afraid is natural. We will not live. We will not base our lives around being afraid. And secondly, to our aid, when everything else seems to have been shaken, when everyone in your life maybe has run out, here's something. Jesus is running in. Just as quietly as he came to them. If you go to the lowest point of your life right now, whenever that was, wherever that was, maybe a friend came alongside you and helped you get through it. Maybe you went to your doctor and something he or she did helped you through it. Whatever it was, whoever it was, in my sense of thinking about it, it was yet Christ himself walking alongside you, alongside me. No ta-da. Just this conversation going on. Jesus in his resurrection did something that changed things as they were because it reframed life. I mean, think about it. They were on the same road of resignation. When they find out it is Jesus, they turn around and go back with joy. They turn 180 degrees because they realize something, that reality had changed. This happens in the world semi-regularly. Now, I'm not a runner, but I know we have some runners here. But in 1954, that was a great year, by the way. August the 16th, great day. All right. In 1954, Roger Bannister ran a mile in under 4 minutes. The world was stunned. No one had ever done it. 10 years later, Jim Ryan did it as a high school student. Today, you cannot be any sort of, quote, world-class, high-class runner in terms of that if you're running those kind of distances unless you can run a mile in under 4 minutes. All kinds of people can do it. Why would it take so long, and then why would it take another year? 10 years, excuse me, because we couldn't conceive it. When it was framed differently, a different reality became possible. That's what the resurrection does. It reframes that reality. So we come to the place in the story where Jesus has not done any ta-das. He's listened. I love that. Listened to their story, took it, kind of let it impact him. And then he begins to tell them his story and reframe all that's happened. And they get it. They understand. But before they get to that conversation, they stop. And Jesus acts like he's just going to keep going. Now, I love this. Unless they decide to ask him to eat with them. They stop. They're going to eat. Jesus, that's what the text says in Luke. Jesus is going to keep going. Hey, guys, nice talking to you. Except that they invite him to eat with them. And then there's this sacramental moment, what the church calls Holy Communion, where it says he broke bread with them. And in that moment, their eyes were opened and they recognized it was Christ. So there's this sense of God is there and present. And God breaks in our lives whether we want God to or not. God is there and with us because he cares that much about us. But there is an invitation, an openness on our part that matters. And so the invitation's offered and their eyes are open. And in that, we're reminded that the sacred becomes something that is infused into the ordinary. Bread and wine becomes something special. Life becomes something different for you and me because God's presence is infused in it. And so they would eventually say, looking back, here's what they said in verse 32 of Luke 24. Were our hearts not burning within us? The whole way he was talking with us on the road while he was opening the scriptures to us. What happens next reveals that transformation is possible. Here's why. Their circumstance wasn't changed. You know, sometimes we think, well, my hope or my fulfillment or my meaning in life is based on my circumstances being good and no problems and no disruptions in my relationships. And no. Their circumstances hadn't changed at all, but something had changed within them. And they rushed back the same road they'd traveled on. The road of resignation turns in the path of celebration. And something tremendous happens. There's this tremendous hope, this uncontainable joy, this unthinkable celebration of life. Now, when I think of that, this may sound a little strange, but all week I've been thinking about that presence that comes alongside us, and we don't know necessarily that it's even God that's come alongside of us, but he will not leave us alone. It's a beautiful thing. Here's an image for that. Let me give you an image. It's Paul's image later in the New Testament. It's the image of adoption. You know how Paul uses adoption? I love this. Adoption, there's nothing a child can do to get themselves adopted, right? I mean, a two-year-old child can't get them a website and go online and take selfies, you know, and post them and say, hey, I'm really cute. I really wish I had a mom or dad or both or, you know, that kind of thing. A child can't do that, right? Out of love, a couple decides to do something to change the story, to redefine the story for a child. And the Apostle Paul says that's the image of adoption, that God adopts us. We can push back on that. We can do all kinds of things with that. But the truth is, you're seen as a son or daughter in God's eyes. That's a beautiful image. So I think we want to end with celebration, right? Don't we want to end with celebration? So I've brought my celebration eggs. We're going to throw these at each other in just a moment. In the 1860s in Mexico, they developed a tradition. It's a sacramental thing, really, of creating eggs. We call them, in English, confetti eggs. But they're just eggs. Just, you know, like you go and buy at the store. And we're reminded that this shell is sort of the way we look at life. We see the outside, but there's something really exciting inside that's worth celebrating. And so I think I'm going to ask my grandson back there somewhere? Yeah. Oh, you're going to get him. It may take us a while. I don't know if I can talk about this egg that long. Oh, Levi, come up here, Levi. There's my youngest grandson. Come on up here, Levi. What's up, bud? Have a seat. Yeah, we've been having fun, haven't we? We've been celebrating. We've had two Easter egg hunts, haven't we? I have an exciting egg here. He's a little young. I hope this doesn't scare him. Christina, you think I'm okay? Okay, all right, he's fine. I talked to Mommy. So we think of what's a celebration. Well, in the 1860s, this Casa Coronas, am I close? Thank you. For you Spanish people, you want to get that right. And it's meant to be a celebration because there's something special in here. Can I break it open? No?
Yeah.
Yeah, he said yeah. He said yeah. He said I could. All right, I'm going to break it over. It's gonna be something special for both of us, okay? Stay with me. It's going to be exciting, all right? Woo! What do you think about that? Isn't that fun? I don't think he liked it that much. All right, I'll let you go back, okay? Run on back there. Let's give him a hand. That's a man right there. So, I thought, you know what? What I want you to leave here with today is that life is a celebration. We celebrate it each and every day. Is that opportunity of no matter how we look at life and go, oh, this, there's something God is doing inside your life, inside your family, inside your work. There's my other grandson. All right, buddy, here we go. Hey, you want to wave to everybody? You did last time. You want to say hi to everybody? No, you're shy today?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, you want to get out the special egg for me? We got a special egg right here. All right, you hop down there. I can't let one do it, not the other. Hold on, here you go. Here you go. We got a special egg, all right? Pick you out one. All right, that's good. All right, now, here's what we're going to do. We're going to break it open, okay? You ready? Something's going to happen. You ready? Woo! How about that? Hey, you didn't get any on you. Going back. That's good. I didn't know I was going to quite be doing this much entertainment this morning, actually. But I absolutely wanted you to go out celebrating this morning. So I want to give you an Easter blessing. If you'll stand for just a moment, the band's going to come up. We're going to sing another song. Here's the message this morning. Here's the blessing. Whatever road you're on, if it's good this morning, oh, celebrate. Be happy. Rejoice. If it's tough, remember you're not alone. Remember that in Easter, no matter your circumstances, there is one with you who has changed life and made it full of possibility and optimism and hope to the fullest. May his presence bless and keep you and your family, uphold you, to know that you're never alone, no matter the trails you walk, that God is with you through his Son, Jesus Christ, through his Holy Spirit. So, celebrate.